Good morning, everyone. Welcome to week three at the legislature. I'd like to welcome everyone to this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. A quorum is present. The room seems a little empty. I don't know why that is. Anyway, this morning, I just would like to let everyone know that we are going to be adjourning today by 11:15 because we have a floor session scheduled. So we have two bills today that we're going to be hearing. I think we can move through them relatively quickly while at the same time giving them a full hearing. And so on the first one, first of all, we have the approval of the minutes from...
Make a motion for approval.
Oh, thank you, Representative Bierman. Vice Chair Bierman moves approval of the minutes of January 12, 2023. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, so we can go right to House File 52, which is Representative Richardson who's here with us. And since Representative Richardson is not on our committee, the chair will move that House File 52 be recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. Welcome to the committee, Representative Richardson, and your testifier. And please go ahead and tell us about House File 52.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 52 expands the state's Patient Bill of Rights currently in statute and establishes the right for a pregnant patient to have a designated support person while receiving health care. The issue of laboring alone and the increased risks has gained national attention, and one change.org petition on the subject garnered more than 600,000 supporters. In addition, it is one of the recommendations from the House Select Committee on Racial Justice report, and it's also the stance of the World Health Organization. During the pandemic, restrictions have resulted in pregnant patients giving birth alone or effectively banning doulas. Decisions to separate families during and after childbirth is harmful and can have long-lasting implications. It can have impacts on mental health and also endanger a patient's physical health. A spouse, partner, or another family member can provide physical and emotional comfort during prenatal visits, labor, and postpartum. They are also essential in alerting staff when something goes wrong and a laboring patient cannot notify nurses themselves. In previous years in this committee, we have heard the testimony of patients who experienced severe morbidity events during their labor and were unable to call for help independently. The prenatal period, labor and delivery, and postpartum period are a time of vulnerability. Research shows that patients benefit from having support they trust. Benefits include decreased need for pain medication, shorter labors, fewer C-sections, and that is notable because the risk of death following a C-section is 5 times higher than following a vaginal birth, and more positive health indicators for infants as well. The data on giving birth in the United States is frankly terrifying. I've testified in committee many times on the fact that black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from a pregnancy-related cause when you control for all the factors. Education, income, family status, general overall health, insurance status, mental health, and substance use disorder status, they're still more likely to die. This is with full knowledge that the vast majority of these deaths, over 80% of them, can be prevented. The ability to have someone who can speak up for a patient in crisis can be the difference between life and death. Furthermore, 1 in 3 women report that their birth was traumatic. Another disturbing data point is that 28% of women birthing in hospitals reported being mistreated, such as being shouted at, threatened, physically restrained, ignored, having treatment withheld, or being forced into treatment they did not want. The goal of this bill is a recognition that a support person plays a distinct role from a midwife or doula, and with the known risks and vulnerabilities, each play a critical role. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Richardson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and who you're with, and please go ahead.
Good morning. I am Akmiri Sakara. I work with the Cultural Wellness Center, and I have been a birth attendant or doula for the last 30 years. And so birthing people need to have a designated support person to help them be more comfortable and to have someone to advocate for them in a time when they're extra vulnerable. We make sure that the birthing family gets the care they need, and we connect them with the community care team and make sure that that connection is respected. We support people and can provide education to the pregnant people and families at a pace that they can receive it. And above all, we give them the power to speak up for themselves, and that power empowers them so it's in their hands, that they're able to feel confident and be able to give their baby everything they need. Babies are conscious, babies know what's going on, and when you have the parent feeling really good about themselves and their birthing experience with their designated support person, it's an important piece.
All right, thank you very much. I think we could take questions if members have any. Well, I'm not seeing any questions. We do have an amendment that's been given to us. Would anyone like to offer the amendment? I think it's the A1.
Madam Chair.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
All right, Representative New Brindley moves the A1 amendment, and I believe that we have that in our packets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is in the packet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. This is a great bill. I am happy to support this bill today and will absolutely be voting for it. The amendment would simply remove the word pregnant so that this would be applicable to all patients and not just pregnant women as they are giving birth or going through appointments. It would apply to all. And I hope that this amendment will be given serious consideration. I would just share the example. You know, several years ago, my late husband had ALS. I think probably most people know that. And particularly for hospital stays. He had a couple of extended hospital stays, and every time that was the case, I stayed with him the whole time in the hospital. And as it turns out, that was really critical. You know, when you have ALS, it is a degenerative disease, and you effectively become paralyzed. And that also means that your mouth and your tongue and these things become paralyzed. And it came to a point where one of my daughters, I have five children, one of my daughters and I were effectively the only people who could interpret it, what he was saying and what his needs were and his desires. And it was really critical that I was there in the hospital with him to be able to advocate for him, to be able to interpret what his needs were at any given time. And so while I absolutely love this bill and frankly, I very much appreciate the testimony that was given, and I very much appreciate the unique needs, particularly in minority communities, regarding pregnancy. And I just hope that we can also recognize that really this is so good that it should apply to everyone, and everyone should have that same opportunity to support when they are receiving health care. And I would ask for a yes vote on the amendment. Thank you.
All right. Is there any discussion among members to the amendment? Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, support this bill. I think it is super important, especially when we talk about language barriers, either because our loved one is really struggling to communicate. I have the experience of a husband being intubated and sick, and actually in a specialty area where a lot of people aren't allowed. And the nurse informed me that I had to leave, and I said, no, I'm the only one that knows, and I'm the one that signed the papers, so I will stay. The doctor gave me permission, and more than one time, they were giving him something that was protocol, and I said, you better be careful. I know him. This is going to be a problem. Nurse told me, specialty nurse, one-on-one nurse, said to me a couple days later, boy, were you right. And it isn't that I know all the medical stuff. It is that I know the person. And so I would wish that we would also consider removing the pregnant, not because we don't want women to have that support system, both my daughters use doulas. It's something that we didn't have, which I have to admit my husband would have rather been in the waiting room and the doula been with me. He's scared to death of blood. but the point being is that everyone, my elderly father does not want to go to the hospital anymore because he is fearful that he will be separated from either my mother or me. And I understand his fear. And like I've told nurses, I can be the calming factor. Not everybody can. But I think we really need to consider this is an important message to our medical facilities that we have support systems for our loved ones. Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a situation, too. My oldest boy had seizures, and at age 7, he had to have surgery. And so we spent a lot of time with him throughout that whole process. And one interesting part, you know, that just shows that, you know, that a young person can behave differently around different people. So they, after his surgery, which was brain surgery to correct the seizure, they asked him a bunch of questions, and he pretended like he didn't understand what he was saying. And so if we weren't in the room, they would have figured it out eventually. But tell you what, it was pretty dramatic even for us, but we knew what he was doing. And so it's just really important to be there as a parent for a young person, too. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other discussion from members? Okay, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for bringing this amendment to start this conversation and also for the other members' comments as well. One thing that I want to clarify about House File 52, this is a bill that has been vetted by community over a number of years. This is a recommendation that came out of the House Select Committee on Racial Justice, and it was also based in evidence because there's current research that shows the benefits of having a companion as part of the birthing experience. And there's also research that shows the significant challenges that result. I think it's really important to start having this conversation about other patients and whether there is evidence out there to support that as well. And also understanding, having worked with Minnesota ACOG and others, I am not a medical provider, but if there's a surgery going on or other things, I think that there needs to be a conversation to really understand what the impact of broadening this would be, and happy to commit to working on that with you, Representative New Brindley, if that is something that you're interested in working with me along it as well. But at this time, I would respectfully ask for a no vote on the amendment before us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative New Brindley.
May I ask for a roll call, please?
Okay, roll call having been requested.
Madam Chair, I have one question, if I can.
Sure. Representative Nadeau. Thank you.
And thank you for that. I'm really surprised that that's the rationale. And if that is the case, you know, so be it. But, I mean, I think there's evidence everywhere that suggests that having a partner in, be it mental health, be it school-based, be it, you know, be it in a surgery center, I don't understand why this wouldn't be something, you know, that there's no cost, as far as I understand, anywhere. What would be the downside of that? And then if there's an issue, we work on removing it down the road. I'm just very curious about why that wouldn't be an acceptable amendment. Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what I am saying here is I'm open to working on this down the road as well, and also doing the work to ensure that we are engaging with the community around this as well. This is an issue that came up out of the crisis that we have within our state, where Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes. it's centering the people's voices who are closest to the pain of that issue. And this is something that has been vetted. We've talked with medical providers. We've talked with community around this as well. And I think that we should do that as well as we look at expanding it. So I am not opposed to conversations of looking at expanding it within the future. But I also just want to ensure that we are moving forward with this recommendation, who has just been in this committee at multiple times at this point as well.
All right, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, and thank you, Representative Richardson. And I would vote no on this particular amendment because what I want to just state is that the importance of focusing on this particular demographic, that we do know that in the cases that were that our friends across the aisle pointed out, that they asserted themselves and they were allowed to be in those spaces. As a person of color, I've been in healthcare system where my husband has asserted himself and he was denied access to be there with me. So that's why I think that this type of bill is really important to keep it very specific in this way, because we do know that the outcome for some of us in these healthcare systems, we are actually denied it when we are asked. When I was in the ER, I was lost for an entire day, and the hospital lied to my husband because they didn't let him with me. And then when they said I had left voluntarily, but I was still in their hospital. So these are the types of things that happened. Had I died in that room that night, he would not have been with me and he would not have known and he couldn't have advocated for me. So thank you, Representative Richardson. And I would support a no vote on this because it needs to stay specific and work with the specific demographic. And I think thinking about working on it further in the future is a really great idea.
Okay. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that we understand that this language actually is not demographic specific. The language does not protect minority women. It does not protect minorities at all. This language is specific to pregnant women. And so I would argue to Representative Herr's point, her experience is exactly why we should accept the amendment. Because if her situation was not that of pregnancy, this amendment would require her husband to have that access to be with her. And it is exactly why we should do this. I wasn't going to speak again, but I'm with the continuing conversation. I just need to. I also just want to point out, you know, as Representative Nadeau showed or explained, there is a lot of evidence and a lot of data that this applies in a variety of situations. And like I said, while I absolutely appreciate the author's testimony, particularly regarding pregnant women and particularly minority pregnant women, we absolutely recognize the disparities there and that those things need to change. I'm just not sure why we would do that to the exclusion of protecting the rights of anyone, and again, Representative Herr's husband being able to be in a room regardless of the status of being pregnant or not. People should have that access regardless of that status. And I would just say, you know, I mean, we talk about evidence and, you know, it was referenced, this came out of the House Select Committee on Racial Justice, and frankly, those recommendations were never vetted in the committee. We talked about a lot of history. We got a lot of background in committee, but we did not vet the recommendations in committee. So, I mean, while I think it is 100% valid and we should acknowledge that and we should work to fix that, you know, I mean, some of the evidence presented, well, it is what it is, but there is also evidence to suggest that this should be afforded to everyone. And I'll be honest, it's a little disappointing. It's very disappointing. You know, I mean, I started this by saying I'm voting for this bill, regardless of whether the amendment goes on or not. I'm voting for this bill because it is good policy. But it is also good policy to afford this protection to anyone. That is also good policy. And by voting no on the amendment, that's bad politics.
All right, I have a couple of other members on the list, and then I'm going to see if there's any public testimony, so we need to keep our comments short if we can. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I raised my hand because of the same response to Representative Herr's comments, but the greater thing is this is a crisis. No one said that this is not a crisis. And honestly, there's a crisis across multiple facets of medical care. And a good idea, which all of us agree this is a good idea, no matter what the medical procedure is, isn't it a good idea to have a family member or friends to be assured that someone that knows you as an individual, no matter what your background is, there and present? Because you, even if you're very sharp and intelligent, in a crisis situation, you need someone else there to support you. So when you vote on this amendment, don't vote on, well, it might, could. Look at the core reason for it. Every medical situation, every person, every background should have this good idea enabled for them. Thank you.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the bill's author for bringing this forward. I think it's a very good bill, focused intently on maternal health outcomes and improving those, and I think it by itself stands alone as a bill I'm going to be supporting. But I do want to know about the author's amendment, whether the author could tell me whether the Hospital Association is in favor of this, if she knows, or if there's someone in the Hospital Association in the audience that might shed light, just for future reference. I think that there's, you know, been some good argument for people to have people in the spaces with them, and that's maybe a second phase of this effort. Thank you.
Representative New Brindley, does the Hospital Association know about it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I have heard from the Hospital Association is that they're generally supportive. They actually have concern about the underlying bill language. The only concern is that it's worded in a way that it says at a minimum one designated support person. And so does that mean they're going to have to accommodate one person in a room or 10 people in a room? Because obviously that creates some logistical problems if this is sort of guaranteeing a right to unlimited people in a room. That would be a concern.
All right. Well, the amendment makes that problem worse, I suppose. Representative Bonner.
thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Representative Richardson for bringing this forward. My mom is a nurse, 43 years at Hennepin County, specializing in the emergency room, urgent care, and cardiac critical care. And I know there are spaces, and I guess I too really love the idea and the intent behind this amendment, but I do know that there can be times, particularly in those specific settings, where it may or may not be appropriate. And so I appreciate the idea of keeping this bill straightforward for now, but certainly would encourage you to expand and look at where that might be possible, talking to the hospital associations, the nurses, and so forth, and see if it is something we could expand, because certainly I can see where, particularly in our minority communities, this could be extremely useful to have that representative with you. In most circumstances. And so I would love to see us explore the idea of opening it up, but really being mindful of making sure we're talking to the experts, the nurses, the doctors, the medical associations, the hospitals, to make sure that the expansion would be appropriate, or if we need to make some carve outs in specific situations. So I guess that's more of a question or a comment than a question, but just wanted to say thank you for bringing the bill forward.
All right. And just before we take the vote here, I'm just going to just state that members can also bring bills, other bills, to do some of these things that people are very concerned about. So with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
The chair votes no.
Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Representative Aikman.
No.
Representative Thacker, excused. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Fisher.
No.
Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
No.
Representative Herr.
No.
Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Representative Kwan.
C.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. So we will move on to the bill. And is there any public testimony on the bill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill, if I understand the author's intent, is to decrease health care disparities. The amendment would broaden that to further decrease disparities. As a member of the majority stated in committee about some portions of our populace and citizens do get this option and some don't. And leveling the playing field across medical care would be helping more broadly. And so I am a bit shocked that we can't focus on doing good in a more broad fashion than sticking to this initial step. But some of us might be our braver in going forward, and I hope we as a committee will have an opportunity again to address this. Thank you.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I missed it when the bill was being introduced, but where is this bill going next and what's the path for?
This bill is going to the General Register, Representative Schumacher. And thank you for reminding me as well to say that it was brought up before about vetting. This bill was actually heard last year and was in our omnibus bill.
Very good. Thank you.
Other comments, questions? Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And I did just want to clarify for before that my example specifically was my case, but it was to show that people of color generally are not listened to. So when you come to a topic of pregnancy, which I should have included in my comment, but I wanted to be brief, is that then when the stakes are higher, in which the black women experience death at double the rate of white women, that it becomes all the more critical in the case of pregnancy. And so I'm talking about overall generally in healthcare, but when it comes to a situation like pregnancy, it becomes more critical to actually be aware of what is at stake here. So I just want to make sure that I was clear about that point.
Thank you. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one quick clarifying question. It's in Subdivision 10A, it talks about the healthcare facility must allow at a minimum one designated support person. And then if you go into B, in line 1.15, it says counted towards the limit of one designated support person. I'm just kind of confused at that. Is it one or is it more? Not that it matters that much, it just seems confusing language to me.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. Line 1.15 refers specifically to certified doulas and traditional midwives and makes it clear that they do not count to that limit of one designated support person. And so what we're doing with this amendment is we are setting the floor, not the cap, and ensuring that there would be a person of the patient's choosing that would be a companion during treatments.
All right. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a vote on the bill then. All those in favor of moving, I'll restate the motion that House File 52 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you very much, Representative Richardson. We will now move on to House File 210, Representative Bonner. And Representative Bonner's motion is the intention with this bill is to lay it over for possible inclusion. I think it could possibly later on go on its own, but it may have a fiscal aspect. And so just for today, the motion will be to lay it over for possible inclusion. So is that your motion, Representative Bonner?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is my motion.
All right, thank you. So we have an author's amendment to the bill. Representative Bonner, did you want to move that right away to place it in the form in which you'd like to discuss it, or what is your pleasure with that?
Yes, please. This is just some technical clarifications to the language.
All right. So Representative Bonner moves the her author's amendment, the A1. Any discussion? Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just ask the amendment author to run through. While I appreciate that it's not a lengthy amendment, it's certainly not a technical amendment to the language. It adds completely different language to the actual bill. So I would wonder if the author of the amendment would run through that, please.
All right. Well, Representative Bonner, if that being the request, maybe you'd like to go and maybe we should just withdraw the amendment for the moment and then go explain the bill. Would that make more sense to do that rather than walk? Well, it's up to you. Do you want to just walk through what the amendment does?
Well, I mean, it's really pretty straightforward.
Okay.
It's fairly self-explanatory, to be perfectly honest. It just adds some additional language here to make sure that we're giving folks good information, that they have that available to them when making decisions about something like a long-acting reversible birth control.
All right. So, members, it is customary to allow an author to amend their bill and put it in the shape in which they'd like to discuss it and then have the discussion on the bill afterwards. But Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bonner, I'm curious, just if you were going to choose a contraceptive option in a hospital or a primary care, wouldn't your doctor / nurse explain your choices? So isn't that a constant thing? I mean, I would ask my choices, and I would expect that's a requirement of a medical person to explain that to as you're making that choice.
So again, I think we're putting the cart ahead of the horse here. So let's vote on the amendment, and then that question could be addressed and answered in the course of discussing the bill as amended. So all in favor of adoption of the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And now, Representative Bonner, you could go ahead and explain your bill, and maybe you can incorporate an answer to that question into your discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for allowing me to be here today and have the opportunity to present House File 210, which allows women to receive long-acting reversible contraception, also known as LARC, in an inpatient setting immediately postpartum. Minnesota is one of only a handful of states that have not yet used guidance that was released by CMS back in 2016. That outline numerous payment approaches that state Medicaid agencies used to optimize access to and the use of LARC. The goal of this bill is to provide options that lead to healthy moms, healthy pregnancies, and ultimately healthy babies. Long-acting reversible contraception methods like intrauterine devices, IUDs, and subdermal contraceptive implants are among the most effective forms of contraception on the market today. They can be safely placed immediately following childbirth and prior to hospital discharge when it is convenient for the new mother. It's important to note to members that the LARC device and its placement procedures are covered benefits by private and public insurers, but they are generally performed in an outpatient setting today. This means a woman would come back for her 6-week appointment, and the cost of the device and the placement would be covered. However, what we know is that as much as 40% of new moms do not come back for the six-week checkup, and between 50 to 60% do return to intimacy within this time frame. They do not return either due to transportation, childcare, or economic issues. We all agree that healthy moms and healthy babies are the ultimate goal. Allowing new moms to have the LARC placement immediately following delivery can increase healthy outcomes, reduce stress on the mom's body, reduce adverse outcomes for babies that don't have better spacing, like low birth weight or other complications. Spacing children at a pace that works for families, providing a needed break on expenses from formula and diapers to daycare, and simply it is the right thing to do to deliver on our goal of healthy moms and healthy babies. It is important for women to have all contraception options available and work with their physician on deciding which is the most appropriate for them and their growing families. In your packets, you will have received the CMS guidelines outlining how 42 other states have dealt with this issue previously. Most hospitals allow hospitals to bill for the cost of the device outside of the bundled payments for labor and delivery. This is precisely what we are proposing here today. This covered benefit should not matter if women receive it inpatient or outpatient. It is an important contraceptive option that is more convenient, more reliable, and with less discomfort for moms. Here to testify with me today, if you have additional questions, is Dr. Fieberger of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, followed by Dr. Wu Arvasuni from the Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians. And with that, I will
go
back to the chair.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Siri Fiebiger, and I'm here to testify today on behalf of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in support of House File 210, which would allow for the placement of long-acting reversible contraception, which includes IUDs and contraceptive implants immediately postpartum. And I'll be reiterating much of the vital points that Representative Boehner has presented. We want to thank Representative Boehner for authoring this important legislation, which provides a vital contraception option amidst critically rising maternal morbidity and mortality rates, which Representative Richardson enumerated so eloquently earlier. Accessible and effective contraception aids women in birth spacing, which prevents the short interpregnancy intervals associated with adverse obstetric and neonatal outcomes, including preterm birth and infants small for gestational age. Placement of LARC in the immediate postpartum period, which is defined as from 10 minutes to 2 days after delivery, is an essential option for many reasons. Roughly 40% of our patients, regardless of demographic, cannot attend their postpartum visit for reasons such as work, lack of transportation, and or child care options. Reproductive justice is the access to safe contraception free from government or healthcare system interference. We have barriers here in Minnesota limiting access and equity. These limits meant my patient last week did not get her desired IUD placed after her high-risk delivery here in Minneapolis, as she can't get one from her rural Minnesota clinic. Despite the convenience of immediate postpartum LARC and the high satisfaction rates for women who use them, LARC is still underutilized here because Minnesota is one of the one remaining seven states that has not followed the CMS guidelines that encouraged state Medicaid programs to increase access and to provide coverage for immediate postpartum placement. The main barrier is the lack of reimbursement for device costs that exceed the global delivery fee. 43 state Medicaid programs and commercial insurers have developed their own reimbursement procedures, which you have in front of you, allowing hospitals and physicians to bill outside of the global delivery fee to make this option available to women. We do want to make clear that ARC is already a covered benefit and that House File 210 only increases options for access. Providing immediate postpartum LARC is evidence-based, patient-centered, and safe, and is a vital option for the women of Minnesota. Thank you again for allowing me to testify and for hearing House File 210. I'm available for any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. And we have Dr. Alex Vasuni. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dr. Alex Vasuni.
Dr. Vasuni, could you pull the mic a little closer? I don't know if it's only me, but I have a little trouble hearing.
Is that better, Madam Chair?
A little. I think you need to really, really speak into it.
I'll try hard.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dr. Alex Vasuni. I'm a family physician practicing here in West St. Paul, and I'm president of the Minnesota Academy of Family Physicians, the largest specialty society in the state, representing more than 3,100 members. I'm here today in strong support of HF 210. As family physicians, we serve patients from the earliest ages through the end of their life. Our members provide care to pregnant people as well as newborn children, often serving as a trusted medical advisor for the whole family. A key part of the care that we provide includes family planning services. We counsel patients and families on what their options are and what might be the best fit for them. One important family planning option is the use of long-acting reversible contraceptives, or LARCs. LARCs are highly effective and have a high level of patient satisfaction. The postpartum phase is a natural time for us to work with patients on what their choices are for family planning post-birth. If LARC is the right option, patients may desire to have it placed while they are still in the hospital. Unfortunately, this is currently not reimbursed by medical assistance. HF 210 would provide medical assistance coverage for LARCs provided while the patient is still in the hospital immediately following a delivery. Without this bill, patients must go home and return on a later date if they choose to have a LARC inserted. This requirement is not based on what is best for the patient. In fact, many times it is more difficult for a patient to return for a LARC and to not receive the contraception coverage that they did not desire. I personally have had several patients have closer interval pregnancies than they desired because it was challenging for them to return to clinic to get the contraception that they wanted, and being able to place it while they're in the hospital would be a benefit for them. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I ask for your support on HF 210 to ensure that all people who want LARCs are able to receive them. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. So, members, we are kind of coming up on our ending time here. I want to make sure we get all the testimony. Obviously, this bill is going to be laid over. If it gets taken up again or included in another bill, we'll have more time and can have some more discussion on it. But is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the bill, on House File 210? All right. I'm not seeing anyone. Thank you. Are there questions from members? We could take maybe a couple of questions before we adjourn for the day here. Representative Nadeau.
I'm always up for a question, Madam Chair. Thank you. So I did talk to HCMC, and I think the earlier testifier said that one of her patients was unable to get the LARC installation immediately. I talked to HCMC, and because I'm very supportive of this, by the way. I think this is a good bill. It's reasonable. And HCMC, or Hennepin Healthcare said that they install them. They're administered regardless of being definitively paid for. They're part of the DRG. So that's partly why I'm supportive of it, because we're doing it anyway, at least in Hennepin Healthcare. But what would prompt a hospital not to do it? Just simply they're not being paid? I mean, there's billions of things they don't get paid for. But
okay, I see Dr. Fiebiger is coming back to address this question. Dr. Fiebiger.
So the IUD itself costs about $1,000, and our global fee is $4,000 for the entire package of pregnancy care. And that's a whole other conversation. But the $1,000, they're not allowed to charge for that $1,000 outside the global fee the way the current things are. The way HCMC works around it, at least my understanding from the providers that I know there, is that they order the IUD in the clinic setting. have the IUD brought over to the hospital and put on a shelf with the patient's name on it. So it's already been charged for in the outpatient setting at, for future use. And then they insert it at the time of delivery and don't charge for it, the insertion. But they've already been able to get the IUD reimbursed in the outpatient setting. So that's how that's the workaround, which is not practical for the vast majority of patients. I'm hospital-based. I don't have that access. I don't have a clinic practice that I can do that. I work as a hospitalist for a high-risk group. So,
thank you for clarifying that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. And really short, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My only question is, has a fiscal note been requested, and will we have a chance to run through that?
Ms. Carney.
Chair Liebling, Representative Brindley, fiscal note has been requested.
And Representative New Brindley, that's why we're not moving the bill.
Perfect.
All right. So with that, House File 210 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much to the testifiers. And members, you're going to have to scoot over to the House floor, and we stand adjourned.